You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Happy Monday. We are back and doing it. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're at your team every day. I am your man on the ground, Isaiah Hull, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group. Big apologies for not having a Thursday episode. Friday episode. That was the apex of the... I did not know Zuri was underneath me. The apex of the coughing, thanks to the ear infection. I know, it doesn't make any sense. Coughing because of an ear infection, but that's what I'm assured... situation is. But we are, I am 90-ish percent better. Still coughing a little bit. Shouldn't have to deal with it anymore. We're going to make up an episode this week. So we're starting off the week with the mailbag that was supposed to be on Friday. We'll probably do another one on Saturday. I think that's appropriate. We'll do a 6-day week this week. Now that I am Hopefully, fully getting better here, because this has been really tiring. You mix being sick with trying to get a house. It's not a fun time. Before we start out, I do want to give a shout out to Steve Dace, who invited me to see his new movie Nefarious over the weekend, and it was phenomenal. I didn't even cough. I think like maybe 3-4 times during it. So that was like the beginning of being better, but I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. I can't wait to see it again, to be honest. Congratulations on that achievement. I think Sean Patrick Flannery from Boondock Saints was just beyond amazing in it, as well as, Adam Davies from Entourage. So check it out in April when it comes to your theater. All right, let's get into it, starting with our leaders in best, James Crudup at James Crudup 6. Do you give Juwan a pass for this year, or is his seat slightly getting warmer? I mean, it is slightly getting warmer. I think any time that you have a team at the level of Michigan basketball, at least how it's been since relatively early in the John Beilein era, I'm talking like year 3 forward. I mean, even John Beilein teams, there was a couple NITs in there. But you're always going to get that. I mean, there were certainly some fire Beilein moments in the middle of his tenure, really. So it's you're going to have a little bit of a warmer seat. Do I think it's, hey, you gotta get out of here? No, I mean, there is the extenuating circumstance of losing Jalen Llewellyn early in the season. They had some early departures and transfers and things of that nature that kind of preceded this. And yeah, you want to be, you know, essentially bulletproof from that, but it's not always going to happen. So I give him not a full pass, but I give him at least a little bit of a pass. Now, if you go into this next season and you feel like, all right, we've got all of the roles covered, you know, and everything, and they underachieve again, then I think it's not firing time, but hot seat time. And then after that, if it's still not going well, that's when it's time to say adios. I think you give him a little bit more leeway, kind of the same way you would with Jim Harbaugh, because they are native sons. You can say what you want about this year and last year as far as in season. Last year, they at least made the Sweet 16. I think that he's still done a mostly good job. This year has just been a lot of... I mean, like, listen, they were in almost every game this year. Weirdly, the Rutgers game in the Big Ten tournament was was one of, like, only a couple games that they kind of weren't in the near end of it. It's kind of what you would expect from a young team and being incapable of closing. But if they lose Jet and Kobe Bufkin, you might not be getting much better. And, you know, it's no guarantee they keep Hunter Dickinson either. You hope you get a Hunter for one more year. If you don't, things might not look very good. I don't know. Josh Barr at Jadicky, going off topic this week, thoughts on the first couple episodes of the new season of The Mandalorian? I've liked it. I haven't loved it thus far, but I feel like it's hard to continue going up. I do think that episode 2 of the season, I know it's like what, episode 18 or whatever they're calling it, was pretty cool, especially once I went back and watched the Star Wars Explained recap with the Mythosaur and all of that, just things that I maybe wasn't really catching on to. And then it was like, oh, right, okay. You know, like sometimes I just swear I'm very naive. I've liked it a lot so far. Not necessarily at the level that I liked season 2, probably as much as I've liked season 1. And honestly, in a way, though, I'm just kind of like, let's get through this and get to Ahsoka, because that's my character, that's my girl. All right, on topic, you are given the power to make one change in the AD from policies to staff. What do you change for the largest benefit? I mean, I openly advocate for NIL in a way that, I don't know, I think that's probably it. The problem is I don't know that I know enough to be like, all right, this is, I can go in and change the AD. I think embracing NIL to its fullest extent would be the best option, the best thing that it could do. So that would probably be it, is embracing NIL. But, and that's going to benefit at least the two majors and probably some hockey as well. Outside of that, I'm not really sure, to be honest. And that's just where I'm at. My brother in metal, Michael Wolf at MWolf21. What are you looking for in the spring game? Which guys are you waiting to see have a good game? One of them is the guy that we saw, that I talked to today, and that's Braden McGregor. Really want to see him be a game wrecker. But simultaneously, I'm going to add Chris Jenkins to that, because it's just the way that Junior Colson talked about Chris Jenkins today had me salivating, to be honest. I mean, it's just like the way that he was getting talked about is the same way that like Mo Hurst was getting talked about going into 2017. Similar to how Mozzie Smith was getting talked about going into last year. I kind of feel like Chris being more of a Mo Hurst size, it's going to end up looking more like and playing more of the Mo Hurst role rather than being like the typical tip of the spear. I think that it would be, you know, I think he can have a similar, more of a similar season to Mo. I'm going to add Mason Graham. I mean, currently we're just going defensive front. Mason Graham, because I saw him walk into Shem Beckler today, and then like 2 minutes later, I saw Kenneth Grant. Mason Graham looked every bit as big, if not bigger, than Kenneth Grant. Now, granted, he was wearing a big coat. Kenneth Grant actually looked a little bit more svelte. He was wearing just like a sweatshirt, like I'm wearing. And just looking at Mason is just like, he looked like he doubled in size from last year. So I'm excited about Mason Graham. Opposite that, I want to see the receivers take off. And we got a question about the receivers here momentarily, so I'll save that for a second here. Jimmy Whitner at Jimmy Whitner 1, over under this week, recruiting weekend 2.5, obviously we're past that, obviously they got nothing, I would have said under anyway. Number 2, your thoughts on the possibility of 2,000 yard rushers? I think it's possible, not necessarily plausible, but it certainly could be. I think it just depends on the dedication of the run versus the pass, which I'm assuming they'll have, and how much they get. But I mean, Blake missed 3 games essentially, and got there. Of course, Donovan missed several games, wasn't the star runner, and still almost got there. So I think it's likely that that's probably going to happen, even though I just said it's probably not plausible. But I also don't think that they're necessarily going to be like, go into Penn State and say, we're just going to run it down your throat. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the strategy, because they had more capability anyway, but I think they'll really have more capability now with JJ a year older, hearing great things about him coming out of camp so far, and having all of these receivers that they didn't utilize last year. And I think that they'll find some different things that they'll do there as far as that's concerned. Number 3, what is Zuri doing? Well, she is currently looking all mopey, sitting on the couch behind me, and now she's staring at me, looking excited, thinking something's happening for her, but nothing is happening for her. And now she looks mopey again. KRTF Farmer 84, which young receiver will make a bigger impact this year, Darius Clemens or Tyler Moore? So this is the what I was waiting to answer. Who do I want to say and who do I am I going to say is different? Who I want to say is Darius Clemens. But Tyler Morris, I think, is going to be very dangerous this year. So we heard a little bit about him. I can't remember which player mentioned him today, but they were saying like he's just sneaky athletic and just really good hands and, you know, really good in space and all of that. And I was already kind of starting to lean that way, again, not based off of my own understanding or even any conversations I've had, but Michigan put out their spring practice pictures over the weekend like they tend to after every practice. And in two pictures, Tyler Morris was featured. And he's been pretty featured in a lot of them, which is kind of an indication that he is stepping into a starring role. Wearing that number 8 like Ronnie Bell, and he looks all the kind of the part. So, it's, you know, when you see a guy making plays in pictures, yeah, it can be selective. Who knows how many plays they're running in practice and all of that kind of stuff. But at the same time, he's making enough where he got pictured more than once. So if nothing else, Michigan wants you to think that he is going to be really good. So I'm going to go with Tyler Morris. Finishing us out in segment two. Jonathan Joseph at J. Joseph 2156. Mason Graham be a top 5 DL in Michigan history? And if yes, was he the best recruiting steal ever? Was he the best recruiting steal ever? I think he absolutely can be. I mean, the fact that he was as good as he was in year one, you don't expect a defensive tackle to be as good as he was in his freshman year. I mean, he played like a guy that was kind of like, you know, between years 2 and 3 through a lot of last year. So, yes, I think that certainly is a possibility, especially in today's day and age. Dude can dunk. I was talking to my underwriter, Charlie Hoover, about, and it's just like, he's like, I can't believe he can dunk. I'm like, I know. It's have that much mass and be able to move it the way he can is unbelievable. As far as the best recruiting steal ever, I mean, he ended up being a 4-star. I would say that they've got more impressive recruiting steals, whether it's sweeping in and getting a guy, but or more so evaluating and picking up a guy. I would look at like Ronnie Bell, who had, that was his only offer, and say like, how important was he to the team, not just in production, but in terms of leadership? Hassan Haskins, I don't think he had many offers of, you know, really to his name offhand. And Michigan was trying to keep him quiet. I remember having that conversation after they offered him. They were like, we're trying not to, like, they hadn't offered, actually, they hadn't offered him yet. They were going to offer him. And they had told me, listen, we're trying to keep this quiet. We don't want other schools to find out. And you look at his impact, what he was able to do. Quiddy Pay, another guy that didn't exactly have like an insane offer sheet and ended up having the impact that he did. So I think that there's some other guys in recent memory that were able to have that. And then there's some others that we're like waiting on, you know. It's like, just think about any guy who kind of flipped, you know. Daxton Hill, even though he flipped back, you know, flipped, you know, from Michigan to Alabama and flipped back. You think about and maybe he didn't have like this glaring, like, wow, what a steal type moment or anything like that. But I mean, you think about even currently guys like Keon Sabb or Darius Clemens and Derek Moore, guys who flipped or were expected to go somewhere else. Michigan hasn't tended to get a lot of those guys where, you know, like a lot of other schools where they suddenly they find themselves like, you think they're going to one school, they go to another. It always seems like it's the other way around. Like Deshaun Hand, everyone's like, remember listening to Mike Farrell the morning of Deshaun Hand's announcement, and he's like, well, it's going to be Go Blue, you know, and feeling really confident, and then it didn't quite go that way that day. So yeah, anyway, I forgot to even pull up the stuff that I need to pull up here. So regardless, we are going to continue on here in just a moment. But listen, before we do, oh wow, the font's different. The Built March Madness bracket is here. We know you have a favorite bar or puff, and now it's time to make it count. Go to builtmarchmadness.com to vote for your favorites. you know, I'll be voting for the coconut brownie puff or brownie chunk rather bar. It's insane. And although their puffs are just so good. And if you want Michigan to win in the NIT, then you'll be voting for that bar too. Support your team, support your bar puff. And when you vote for your favorite bar puff, you will be entered into a drawing where 50 lucky Locked On listeners will get a free box of Built. Not only that, one Locked On fan will win a 12-month subscription to Built to have Built's best bars or puffs delivered monthly straight to your door. You got to try Built. Built's the best protein bar ever. Seriously, they're so amazing. You won't think that they're good for you. What makes Built bars and puffs so good? Well, for starters, they're all high in protein, low in sugar, and covered in 100% real chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. Run to BuiltMarchMadness.com right now to vote for your favorite bar or puff and pick up a box while you're there. You can vote every day in March, so hop in and support your pick. All right, let's get back to the matter at hand. Let's go to our Victor's Valiant, starting with Jim at Jim in the North. Will Moore becoming sole offensive coordinator negatively impact the line? I don't think so, because it didn't really impact the line last year. Can it at some point? Yes, but I think it's more so when you've got a younger group, if you're pulling the double duty. But, you know, it's I think that it'll be fine. I mean, they've got, you know, they've got the personnel to be able to handle that. They've got the veteran leadership. If you were in a situation where you had mostly like sophomores and juniors rather than juniors and seniors, then I think it'd be a different story. But I think we saw last year it was fine. I think he's still coaching the offensive line. But he has to oversee the offense as well a little bit more than he was already last year. Number two, do you think the new Big Ten rules will help Michigan's offense more as it's more of a ball control offense? I didn't see the new Big Ten rules. I've been kind of incapacitated when I'm not doing these things. So, to be honest, I don't know what you're talking about. But if it's more of a ball control offense, sure. But I didn't see that there were new Big Ten rules. I'm sorry. Mark Z at Mark Zimke, do you think the recruiting momentum has a lot to do with a huge group of open positions next year due to expected graduates and players leaving for the NFL feels different this year? No, I think it's, and they don't have a ton of recruiting momentum. I mean, they're getting guys on campus, but I think it's more a product of, hey, you've made it to two college football playoffs. You know, win or lose, you beat Ohio State twice, you go to the college football playoff twice, you're going to start grabbing the attention of more guys. I mean, heck, Michigan State started recruiting better once they started beating Michigan and started being able to get in some bigger guys. I mean, they didn't go completely ham, but they got better at recruiting for a while, and then they started losing. It started, you know, going away. It's you play well, you're going to get the attention of a lot of guys. If you beat Ohio State, yeah, you're going to get a Ryan Montgomery type to come say, like, I want to come visit. I want to see what you're doing in Ann Arbor. I want to be a part of that. You guys are winning. Ohio State isn't. You know, it's the reason why you're able to get a Desmond Howard or a Charles Woodson out of Ohio, right? Because if Michigan was losing all the time to Ohio State in the way that they did before, I'm sure that those guys probably wouldn't necessarily have gone to Michigan instead of Ohio State. So I think that it's you win, you're going to get people's attention. I think that 2020 was probably relatively fresh in a lot of recruits' minds even last year. So now you're getting these younger guys, these 24, 25, 26 guys, and they've paid more attention, and now all they see is, hey, Michigan's going into the college football playoff. So, yeah. Perry Mitchell, at Perry Mitchell 08, why is Olu not getting credit as a top-tier interior lineman in the draft? Everyone is talking about the center from Minnesota as if Olu wasn't hot on the heels of first-round pick Linderbaum in 2021 and didn't win the Remington and Outland himself in 2022. I'm guessing just body type. I'm not really sure. Like they feel like he's a little too short or has short arms. I don't know. And honestly, sometimes it's just like it seems like they overthink things in the NFL when it's like, you know, they start looking at different things that don't necessarily matter as much as just being able to go out there and do the thing. You know what I mean? So I couldn't tell you. It's bizarre, but it is kind of just what the NFL is. They care so much about measurables. And I think that, what's his name? I can't remember his name from Minnesota. It's on the tip of my tongue. I just think that sometimes that they look at those guys and they salivate over potential rather than, and he's got production. So it's not like he doesn't have that, but yeah, you'd think that, you know, Olu coming in and being a driving force and the best offensive line in the country, winning the Outland and the Remington, you think that that would be something, but it doesn't always work that way. You know, David Moak won the Remington and wasn't like everyone in the NFL was knocking down their door for him because they saw he was undersized or thought he was undersized. So sometimes that's how it goes. Coach Kovalevsky, I always say it three times to make sure that we get it right, at @coach_Kovo. Clemson, Florida State, and now UNC are calling for the ACC to abandon equal distribution of revenue and instead pay out more to those that invest more. Do you see similar calls coming for the Big Ten, or is there enough for everyone to be happy with an equal payout? Yeah, I think the latter. I can't imagine that Michigan and Ohio State are going to start demanding. I mean, because that would really upset things, I think, the order. But there, you know, the Big Ten, every school is making more in the Big Ten via their revenue than any other conference, any other school, any other conference. So, no, I don't think that there's any of that. Whereas I think with the ACC, what you have is a very disjointed scenario where, you know, those three, throw in Miami in there. That's it, really, right? Because, like, Boston College, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Virginia, Georgia Tech, West Virginia, like, what? You know what I mean? Well, West Virginia is Big 12, but I forget that they're not Big East anymore, and I was kind of thinking that coast and whatever, but yeah, like NC State, like what do those schools really provide? I mean, ultimately that's a bunch of Indianas, you know. Duke is outside of basketball, they're a bunch of nothing, right? Like if Michigan's schedule was like, well, yeah, they play Virginia, and then they play Boston College, and then they play NC State, and then they play Georgia Tech, how bored would you be? Sometimes it's already boring. Like, I'm looking at the home slate, and it's like Rutgers and Indiana, and, you know, it's sometimes even that's like, oh, it's so boring. But even, like, the top schools in the ACC are kind of boring. With Clemson or Florida State or Miami aren't, like, the top, you know, if they're not just, like, absolutely killing it, it's boring. Some of the best games in the SEC has been Clemson against Syracuse. Last year it was, 2016 it was. It's just like, okay. So they can do what they want. I don't think it'll affect the Big Ten at all. I don't think the Big Ten's going to take that stance. They make enough money as it is. Spencer Whitmore, so should I buy a $300 Obi-Wan replica lightsaber? I'm 32. My wife doesn't get it. I say this as a very dorky person who has 5 lightsabers to my name. 300's pretty high, honestly, though. Like, I don't know where it's 300. If you go to Disney, I don't know if you can go out to shopdisney.com. You could probably get one cheaper. But I don't know if they have the Obi-Wan one or not. But I know the prices have gone down for their replicas. I have a Kylo Ren one. I think I paid $200 for it, maybe $250. And they're only $150 now. Maybe I paid $150, but I swear they went down. I have 3 replicas. I have Kylo Ren, Asajj Ventress, and Emperor Palpatine. I used to be able to see the Emperor Palpatine one behind me in the old studio. I'm sure that'll be back in the new one once that's built. But and then I have 2 that I built at Savvy's workshop. Those were $250 each. So I've spent like $1,000 on lightsabers, maybe more. I will say this. Is it worth it? Absolutely not. Did I get addicted to collecting them? I did. Yeah, I don't know. At least the Asajj Ventress and the Palpatine ones were both on sale. Those two were like the Hasbro Black Label ones. But, you know, they're cool to hold and have on display, but that's about all you're going to get out of it. Anton says, Meet a Bengala at Says Meet a Bengala. Why would anyone even consider turning down the NIT? It's more chances to play and improve. Obviously, we're talking about UNC having turned it down. I think it's kind of like the Dave Portnoy. I'm assuming that it was the letter that was out there yesterday was written by him. He was the first person I see share it. Because you're admitting that you're a second class citizen to some degree. I think it is worth it to be able to improve and whatever, but you don't want to, like, if you're going to go into the NIT, you better, like, do something. Because otherwise, I mean, it can hurt recruiting too, right? Like, if you go into the NIT, you look bad. It is kind of sad. Even the winner of the NIT, that feels sad to me, right? Like, I remember sometimes it's a moment where you feel like things are on the up and up. Like, Michigan was a 2005 or something like that. I think it was 2005. I was back at school, and you know, that Daniel Horton led, and it was like, oh yeah, they won the NIT under Tommy Amaker. Things are on the up and up. They weren't on the up and up, and I just remember how sad all of that felt. So I don't know. That's just my thoughts. Finishing us out in segment two, I Camlin at Hamstand 87, Davis Warren Heisman 2024. That'd be fun, right? I think he might be better than we all kind of give him credit for, but we won't really know. So I'll add to the what am I looking for in the spring game. I want to see him or Jack Tuttle really take that step. I have very little faith in Jack Tuttle. I am sorry, Jack. It is, you know, maybe you're a lot better than I'm giving you credit for, but I watched you play at Indiana. I was not impressed. But we'll see what happens with either of those guys in the spring game. Obviously, Davis Warren and what's his name? The Galvin Belson looking guy. Alan Bowman. Yes, that's a Silicon Valley reference. By the way, you can't look at Alan Bowman and not think of Galvin Belson once I've told you that. But they both looked great in the spring game last year. So I think that's also another thing I'm looking for. All right, we're going to continue on here momentarily. Got a few more questions left. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. It's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores and threes drained. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with same-game parlays. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockdown. That's FanDuel.com/lockdown to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. As usual, we are already pretty much over time. We're going to try to keep this short, so this might be like a 3-minute segment. So yeah, but pretty good first episode back. I always feel like it feels like I haven't done a podcast in 2 weeks, in part because I felt so awful all of last week that I don't really remember. I was just kind of in a haze. I was heavily medicated, haven't been on any medication in the last 2 days, so I feel a lot better, thankfully. Hopefully this is it. Anyway, Keith at Keith_Johnson11, do you anticipate more of an emphasis on the downfield passing attack this year? I do, and I hope so. I mean, obviously, they'll have a commitment to the run. I just hope it doesn't go like it was really enjoyable. Don't get me wrong, running for 400 yards against Penn State. I just want to see more balance. And by more balance, I don't mean, you know, literal 50-50. You need to have passing. It needs to be more like either 60-40 or maybe 65-35. Also, what do you think is more important when it comes to recruiting, NIL or program success? Right this second, probably NIL, but I think that's probably shifting back to program success, and I think it will fully shift back to that once it's kind of everything's on an even playing field, because I think that's at some point, NIL is going to be pretty much the same everywhere to some degree, some way, somehow, at least at the bigger programs. So, I mean, it might not be pay for play, but I think like if it's like, hey, you come here, we're going to give you $1 million compared to you come here and you will get $1 million, but you got to be good. I think that at some point, because also people are going to transfer out, right? And things of that nature. The transfer portal is also kind of a game changer, but program success, I mean, a lot of guys is to be like, yeah, I can go and get a lot of money, but what's the cost? To be in a middling program? Urban Pirate at 20 Roar. Any news on the timeline for Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards' return? Edwards, I believe, is practicing. Blake Corum will return in the summer conditioning. George Paul Lewis at G13 Lewis. Does Cole Cabana get any touches this season? Yes, but do I think they'll be meaningful? No, because you've just got too many people ahead of him. Because you add him to the mix of Blake and Donovan, it's lightning, lightning, lightning. And I think that they're looking for thunder to go along with lightning. So I think they'll bring him along a little bit more slowly. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more Benjamin Hall than him, to be honest. J.J. Brewer at J.J. Brewer 19. What made you write as a Michigan analyst? I'm assuming the verbiage there kind of confuses me for whatever reason, but I'm assuming that you're just asking like what made me become a Michigan writer. I mean, I've done a whole lot episodes on that, but I'll give you the short of it. So I'm a Michigan alum. I was, you know, born in at University of Michigan Hospital. My grandpa and my Aunt Lori were both Michigan alums. I went to Michigan, got obsessed with football near the end of my tenure there, moved to California to work in Hollywood in the entertainment industry. And like Michigan football was my favorite, most important thing when I was out there. Hated it, moved back, couldn't find a job, was bartending and going to alumni association events, reached out to as many people as I could, networked as much as I could, looking for anything. I was trying to do more video for video editing, video shooting, and all that kind of stuff. I wanted to basically like what Ryan Wise does now or what Ty Rogers used to do. I was trying to basically, that didn't exist then, but that's what I was trying to do. And got the opportunity to shoot photos for 24/7 Sports. Steve Lorenz had lamented to me that he wished that they had more writers, so I started doing it pro bono as an intern. Made myself indispensable, got the job. So it was the love of Michigan, and that's what got me into it. And I am, as you see before me now, doing all of the writing and the podcasting and the musings and what have you, the photos and all of that. Ben Ricketts at Ricketts Ben 92. Which transfer do you think will have the biggest impact? I still think it's going to be AJ Barner. Here's my power rankings: AJ Barner, Drake Nugent, Josiah Stewart, Ernest Hausman. And then I don't know after that, but that would be my current power rankings. So, I just think AJ Barner is going to come in and be perfect and really fill up that Luke Schoonmaker role. And I think he's just going to shock people. It's just how good I think he has the capability of being. Finishing us out, Joshua Carlson at Josh WFF 96. With a big month of visits on the horizon, who do you think will be the next recruit to commit? Jaden, Aaron Chiles? Your guess is as good as mine, man. People always ask that question. They've been asking it on the mailbag since we started. Unless there's a guy that has a date that's coming up, it's impossible to... Do I think that both of those guys will commit? I do. And we're going to be doing more recruiting stuff. Part of me getting a mortgage is going to mean that I have to do some things that I'm not comfortable doing as I had been. I don't just get to sit back on my laurels. So we'll be getting into more recruiting here in the coming weeks and months. Not a necessity for me. But I would say those guys, and wouldn't surprise me if like Channing Goodwin, or it wouldn't surprise me if, like a Brady Prescorn came out of nowhere and did it. But I don't think that I could tell you exactly who the next one is. And usually you'll see Steve Lorenz or EJ Holland or those types of guys will also punt on that question generally. All right, that's going to do it. Even 20 questions, 21 questions, and we went 34 minutes. Pretty amazing. All right, thanks for watching. Thank you for listening. On Tuesday, we will probably recap some of the stuff that I learned from the press conference today. Wednesday, we'll probably do recap the press conference that day. Thursday, we'll get back into our spring ball preview. Friday will either be more spring ball preview or pro day reaction, and then Saturday will be another mailbag. That is our plan for the week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you again soon. Peace.